program. If others could understand or be made to understand the reason for the morning sessions and why so much value is placed on these special tears that are shed and the reward with Allah, they surely would not call us the nation of tears. Instead, they would call us the nation of epic.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, welcome to the program Spring of Truth with the wise sayings and counsels of Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh, the founder of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. So in this program, we try to quote some of the sayings and statements and sentences that Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah has uttered on different occasions and places, and we try to elaborate on them and explain about them from our own perspective. In this program, I chose one which deals with the issue of fault-finding, you know, with regards to other people and just closing your eyes on your own problems and shortcomings and just focusing your attention on other people's problems. So he says, no fault is greater than not understanding one's own fault and ignoring it. Although one is a collection of faults himself, he is concerned with the faults of others. This is so true about so many people. It's so painful to be in touch with someone whose fingers are always pointed at you or some other people and never at, you know, himself or herself. When they do something wrong and when people start to blame them, they constantly try to search for someone to put the blame or the problem on them. And after a while, what happens is that you get really sick of these people, you get really tired of them, and you don't want to be around them anymore. And you just gradually try to put a distance between yourself and them and just get them out of your life because you get sick and tired of them. And the other problem is that they will never grow and flourish. I'm trying to like talk from the perspective of that person who is always trying to put his fingers, you know, point his fingers at other people's problems and faults and never look at himself. That person will actually never grow, will never flourish. And that is very sad. Thank you very much for being with us in this program. Until our next program, God bless you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
In the limelight.
America has conducted nearly 400 interventions since its founding, with more than a quarter in the last 30 years. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Nick Terse, writer. This article is published under the heading, Since 9/11, the U.S. has increased military interventions to historic levels. Here's more. The United States has conducted nearly 400 military interventions since 1776, according to innovative research by scholars Siri Takushi and Monica Duffy-Toft. Half of those conflicts and other uses of force, including displays and threats of force, as well as covert and other operations, occurred between 1950 and 2019. The last year covered in a new data set introduced by Cushy and Toft in a Journal of Conflict Resolution article published earlier this week. More than a quarter of them have taken place since the end of the Cold War. The United States has carried out 34% of its 392 interventions against countries in Latin America and the Caribbean, 23% in East Asia and the Pacific region, 14% in the West Asia, North Africa region, and just 13% in Europe and Central Asia, according to a newly refined version of the Military Intervention Project MIP dataset, a venture of the Center for Strategic Studies at Tufts University's Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. Until the end of the Cold War, note Cushy and Toft, U.S. military hostility was generally proportional to that of its rivals. Since then, the U.S. began to escalate its hostilities as its rivals de-escalated, marking the beginning of America's more kinetic foreign policy. This recent pattern of international relations conducted largely through armed force, what Toft has termed kinetic diplomacy, has increasingly targeted the West Asia-North Africa region. These regions have been both larger-scale U.S. wars, as in Afghanistan and Iraq, and low-profile combat in nations such as Burkina Faso, Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Chad, and Tunisia. The MIP data incorporates confirmed covert operations and low-profile interventions by special operations forces, but a combination of U.S. government secrecy and the data set's scrupulous souring standards guarantees that post-9/11 tally is an undercount, according to Cushy, an assistant professor of political science at Bridgewater State University and a non-residential fellow at Tufts Center for Strategic Studies. Recently, for example, Alice Sperry revealed the existence of low-profile proxy war programs run across Africa, the West Asia region, and the Indo-Pacific region. While experts say that the Pentagon has likely used the secretive 127E authority to carry out combat beyond the scope of any authorization for use of military force or permissible self-defense in violation of the Constitution, such highly classified operations may evade capture in the MIP data set. While 127E programs in Somalia and Yemen, for example, overlap with known U.S. military interventions, other uses of the authority, such as in Egypt and Lebanon, may not. The same goes for even lesser-known authorities like Section 1202, which provides support to foreign irregular forces aimed at near-peer competitors. As the MIP is further developed and refined, Cushy and Toft hope that it will allow for a more nuanced understanding of the conditions that cause the United States to launch military interventions and the effects on the U.S. and the nations it targets, including the economic and human toll and inadvertent outcomes. What they ask were the longer-term costs and unintended consequences of the intervention in Afghanistan, and how did that intervention influence U.S. engagements in Iraq, Libya, Syria, and Yemen? The answers they hope will lead to improved data and, ultimately, a better U.S. foreign policy.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the patience and forbearance of Al-Imam Al-Husseini alayhi salam. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano, and in today's lesson, we're talking about the patience and the forbearance of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Now, among the unequaled qualities in which the chief of the Matars had no peer was that of patience on the calamities of the world and the difficulties of the time. His Eminence, Al-Imam Al-Hussein, had tasted the bitterness of patience during his childhood when he had sat in grief of his grandfather's and mother's demise. When his grandfather passed away, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and when his mother, Sayyidah Zahra salamullahi alayha, passed away, Al-Imam Al-Hussein went through a very difficult time. At the time, Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam was forced to practice a lot of patience and forbearance towards these particular outcomings, towards these particular issues. Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam witnessed the horrifying events that were encountered by his respected father. Al-Imam Ali went through a very difficult time during his leadership period. He saw the atrocities and problems borne by his eminence and during the time of the leadership of his brother, Al-Imam al-Hassan. Also, Al-Imam al-Hussein experienced the bitterness of patience. He had a lot of patience towards the period because his brother, Al-Imam al-Hassan, also went through a very difficult period. But at the same time, Al-Imam al-Hussein didn't go back. He practiced a lot of patience on seeing this, in the condition that he saw how his soldiers betrayed him and how they cheated on him, till finally Muawiyah had him assassinated through poisoning. All this needed Imam Hussein. He grew up seeing all these bad atrocities done to his family. He grew up meeting his difficult period of time during his rulership and also his brother's difficult period of time during their rulership. But at the same time, he practiced patience.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Wa alayk,
welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we are speaking about the patience and the forbearance of Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Al-Imam al-Hussein practiced a lot of patience during his lifetime because he grew up meeting a lot of atrocities, a lot of bad happenings during his life, including the death of his grandfather, who was a very close person to him. And also the death of his mother. Of course, she was a very lovable person to him. She really loved Al-Imam al-Hussein, and also Al-Imam al-Hussein loved her so much. And also he faced a very difficult period during the rulership of his father, Al-Imam Ali alayhi salam, and during the rulership of his brother even, Al-Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. And the greatest calamity in front of which His Eminence Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam exhibited patience was that right before his very eyes, the lofty principles of the Islamic religion, the one that took place in front of his very eyes. And these are the lofty principles of the Islamic religions were being trampled upon, and inappropriate sayings were fabricated and falsely attributed to his grandfather. Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam lived in a period whereby when he was the leader, he could experience directly in front of his eyes that people are speaking against the religion of his grandfather. They're talking inappropriate sayings about the religion of his grandfather. And also they were attributing very bad words to his grandfather, which were changing and distorting the law of God. So this was the most painful thing that his venerable father was being announced and imprecated from the pulpits, and how the tyrant Yazid was busy. And also during the time when Yazid was busy in extermination of the Shias and the followers of Al-Imam Al-Ali. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah, we'll meet again. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you. But anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Aperture.
Iran is a country rich in culture, history, and art. The countless historical monuments scattered across the land are manifest proof of the glory of the ancient Persian civilization. And the development of modern-day Iran is evident in its major cities and metropolitan centers. But perhaps what's remained hidden from both foreign and domestic tourists are some of Iran's stunning natural treasures. I'm Daniel Arya. As the 18th largest country in the world, Iran offers a full gamut of climates and geographical attractions, from mountains and deserts to forests and caves. Iran's diverse and dramatic landscapes offer some truly awe-inspiring and unspoiled views to discover. In this week's program, we'll follow Javad Gharai, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the southern regions of Iran, where the hot sand dunes of the desert meet the turquoise and tranquil waters of the Sea of Oman. Stay with us.
Travel is the most important thing in life to me. The reason I travel so much to the unknown spots of my motherland is that I want to discover the hidden beauties of its environment and to meet its diverse ethnic groups. I believe that city dwellers, with all their knowledge, education, and modernity, must have a good relationship with the natural environment and with nature dwellers in order to live a richer, more peaceful life. A relationship like this is vital for our survival in the world we live in. It's early February. In this season, temperatures can plunge to minus 40 degrees in the towering Mount Damavand region. But I've come to a part of Iran where the temperature is as high as 20 degrees above, perfect for a good, long trip in the winter. I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and this time I have traveled to the southernmost spot in my beloved country, Iran. Follow me to one of the most beautiful and pristine areas of my country, in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. To be exact, my destination is the southernmost area of the vast Balochistan region. In terms of culture and ethnic groups, Sistan and Balochistan province is divided into two parts: Sistan in the north and Balochistan in the south. During my many trips to the natural beauties of beloved Iran, I have come across multiple beautiful mountains and spent time traversing most of them, from freezing tall rocky mountains to forested highlands to those sitting on the hot and dry deserts of Iran. But this time, on one leg of my trip to Sistan and Balochistan province, I'm supposed to find mountains that are impossible to climb. The shape of these mountains, or should I say hills, is unique and beautiful. The locals and tourists who have visited this area have named these hills Martian Mountains, Many believe that the rocky formations in this part of Iran are very similar to those on the surface of planet Mars. Geological experts say these hills are sediments at the bottom of a sea that used to be here millions of years ago, were initially buried under millions of tons of soil following the change in the shape of the Earth's crust over the years, and were later unearthed as a result of climatic changes and monsoon rains that washed away the dirt, exposing the real face of these bizarre hills. These mountains are among the most beautiful in Iran, in my opinion. They are no less beautiful than Mount Damavand that's been registered as a national heritage. I hope the Martian mountains of Sistan and Balochistan province, of the Balochistan area in the Chabahar region to be exact, are also put on the national heritage list. The thrust of the Gulf of Oman oceanic crust under the southern area of Balochistan, in addition to wind and water erosions, are among the reasons behind the emergence of these beautiful elevations. They are made up of sedimentary rocks containing clay and lime. The beautiful furrows on their exterior have been carved out by centuries of erosion. The heights of Martian hills vary from one area to another. At their shortest, they stand at more than 5 meters tall, and at their highest, more than 100 meters. At first glance, these hills, referred to as badlands by geologists, may look like they are not very resistant, but you will change your mind once you inspect them up close, although they're not resistant enough against the rain and water of Balochistan. In the midst of these mountains is a plain where rainwater has accumulated over many years, creating a spectacular lagoon by the name of Lipar. Environmentally, Lipar, with its many and varied animal and plant species, is an important lagoon in the region. It is an important feature of the natural environment in Balochistan. The local population use water from the lagoon for their animals and in farming. I'm on my way to one of the most beautiful valleys in the Martian mountains. I've named it the Snail Valley. If you want to know why I picked that name for it, follow me. We walk for about an hour to get to the mouth of the valley. Floodwaters set off by seasonal rains have created a beautiful and unspoiled valley and cave. This is the Nahadi Cave. It acts as the entrance to the Snail Valley. My good friend here, Shir Muhammad, was kind enough to come here from Berries to help me find this cave and walk through it to the valley. I'm sure we are in for a treat. Am I right? The valley, I mean the Snail Valley, is a very long and deep gorge that leads to the Terap Mountain. Terap is what the locals call that mountain. The reason I named this the Snail Valley is because this place is littered with shell fossils. You can see them everywhere in this mountain and in this valley. Beautiful shell fossils that have adorned this boulder and this whole area. All the exterior walls of these Martian or miniature mountains and inside the Snail Valley is covered with these shells that have turned into fossil. Another reason is that this valley looks exactly like a snail. It meanders through the mountain from beginning to end. In some places, it wraps around itself and sends you going around in circles before you can get to the other end of it. The Snail Valley is so curvy. It's one of the most beautiful gorges in the Balochistan region. And let's not forget that if a place has a local name attached to it, we should never try and put a new name on it. We must follow the tradition of the locals who have inherited that name from their forefathers, from their ancestors. So once again, we should use the same names as they do. The gorge is almost impassable in some parts, but I am so enchanted by its beauty, I've decided to move as far as humanly possible. Its many twists and turns and the millions of fossils on its walls have redoubled my resolve to move forward. We are around 10 kilometers away from the Sea of Oman. This is a very high altitude. Obviously, thousands, in other words, millions of years ago, this whole area had been under the Sea of Oman, part of what used to be the Tethys Ocean. These fossil shells date back to that time. These are millions of years old. Every time I step into valleys or Martian hills like these, I'm filled with utter joy. But I'd never take any of these back home with me or use them as ornaments. All I do is pick them up, snap photos of them, and put them back where I found them, to share all these beauties with posterity. We must protect these treasures. We are their guardians. We walk a long way and eventually arrive at a dead end. That's when we have to trace our way back. Fortunately, there are no construction operations going on anywhere close to the Martian mountains, and that adds to the beauty and magnificence of the area. After my visit to the Martian hills, I continue my journey to one of the most beautiful semi-traditional wharfs in Iran, the Berri's Fisherman's Wharf. It is operated by the inhabitants of Berri's village, perched on top of these escarpments. Before the village was relocated to the top of the coastal cliffs, it used to be somewhere on the sand beach. Today, the locals call it Old Berri's. The villagers moved from Old Berri's to New Berri's around 20 years ago. One of the most important reasons for their relocation was the strong winds in the area that would blow for 120 days in a row and dump sand and dust on the village. The second reason was the beautiful Berri's Wharf. The architecture used in the homes and other buildings in Baluchistan has vividly been inspired by Indian and Pakistani architectural designs. They use different, beautiful, vibrant colors in their buildings. The old mosque here is located in the area where Old Berri's used to be. The rest of the village lies in ruins. They stripped the old buildings of their doors and windows and used them in their buildings in New Berri's. But they have left this mosque intact. Everything in this mosque is there, just as it has always been. That's because the Muslim population in Baluchistan have utmost respect for their mosques and sacred buildings. They never demolish them. They abandon such buildings and let nature take its course. The main occupation of the people of Beris is fishing. The men of this land depend on the sea for their livelihood. Some strike out to the sea in small boats and throw their small nets in to catch fish. Others go out in wooden launches, which could be called the biggest of man-made contraptions. They go out to sea and spend months fishing. These large wooden motorboats are equipped with proper refrigerators and air conditioning for the crew. The fishermen here say they are not happy with their catches in recent years. They say marine life populations have shrunk drastically. The declining numbers of fish in seas and oceans has its cause in different and important reasons. The first reason behind the decrease in the numbers of marine life around the world is the boom in the human population on Earth. The growth in the human population has led to a larger demand for fish and in turn to overfishing by those in the fishing industry. Operations that are carried out via large ocean-going trawlers fitted with radars and other high-tech equipment. Ships that have nets running several kilometers and by means of radars can trap thousands of fish in every attempt in the depths of oceans. In almost every catch, these ships bring home fish weighing upwards of 300,000 kilos altogether. Industrial fishing and the overconsumption of marine life by humans leaves the fish no time to reproduce, pushing many species to the brink of extinction. In a recent survey, researchers at the University of British Columbia found that in half a century, human consumption has pushed down big fish populations by 90%, fish that are in high demand on the market. They have predicted that if serious action is not taken against overfishing by developed countries, all these species of fish will have gone extinct by 2050. Marine life populations are on the decline, which will have dire consequences for humans and the environment alike. The ecosystems of seas and oceans are intertwined with the lives of humans and the environment they live in. They're all very fragile. Iran accounts for only a small portion of the marine life caught around the world. The reasons being high prices, the small share the marine animals have of the Iranian diet, and the absence of advanced fishing vessels in the country. But European countries, the United States, Japan, and many other developed countries play an important role in the destruction of marine ecosystems. They have done more damage to the environment than any other country in the world. And this is a result of a boom in their populations, a change in consumption patterns, and the lifestyle of the people living in those countries. There are two other important reasons that have contributed to the dwindling numbers of marine animals: contamination and global warming. Beris is a very beautiful wharf. It was built at the foot of the Beris cliffs, offering a spectacular view. Launches and boats return here with their catch of the day to sell their prized sea creatures to the middleman. Beautiful the fellow is. The local fishermen here call it the kilkita in their local dialect. It's so colorful. Unfortunately, she too is still carrying her eggs. They get caught in the fisherman's net in this season. Most of those I've seen were ready to spawn. This is their time to reproduce, but they don't get the chance to do it. They are pulled out of the water along with the thousands of eggs that they are carrying in their abdomens. Poor thing is struggling to get out of my hand. Just look how beautiful it is. So colorful. One of the fishermen gave me this lobster and said I could have it, but I'm gonna let it go because it's carrying so many eggs. After my visit to Barry's Wharf, I set off on a walking journey along the shores of the Sea of Oman. Of course, I'll be walking on the cliffs all along. The view from atop the cliffs in Barry's is simply matchless. Fortunately, there aren't constructions of any kind up here. The area is an asset for Balochistan and indeed for Iran because of its pristineness. I hope to see the same unspoiled beauties and pristineness the next time I visit this part of my country and its beautiful landscape. I hope more and more tourists come to visit Balochistan. Nature travelers go to places that are pristine and untouched in order to immerse themselves in the peace and quiet that those places offer. Beautiful rocky cliffs that you see here are where Barry's begins. Those are the shores of Barry's, among the most beautiful of our beloved country, Iran. But the bluff along the shore is crumbling into the sea. The waves lap at the walls made up of millennia-old sediments that settled on the bottom of the Sea of Oman that used to cover this whole area. The bluff is capped by a 2-meter-high layer of rock, like the one I'm sitting on right now. It feels like reinforced mortar with all the shells and algae in it, fossils that have been here for thousands, or should I say millions of years. But the layers underneath are weak and brittle, allowing the waves to chip away at them one bit at a time. The green blocks or rocks that you see on the coast are in fact the top layer of the cliff. They used to be up where I am right now. It's going to take the waves some time to turn them into sand and dissolve them in the water. It's about 60 meters down to the foot of the cliff, and as you can see, a huge slice of the cliff has splintered from the rest, or should I say from Barry's territory, and will crash into the sea one of these days. So I better cross onto the other side because it's dangerous to stand here. I really don't want to go down with it. This gaping crack here is almost 10 meters deep, but it's very likely for it to be much deeper in other parts. It's too dark for me to see. This is a very dangerous spot.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد وعجل فرجهم.
Dear respected brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Habibullah Fasihizadeh with the Let's Recite the Holy Quran, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools
of
Network.
Of course, me.
Yeah, yeah. And also a group of students of Sevier International School. I really welcome you all again. Thank you so much for joining us. So we have here Muhammad Hadi Naghawi and
Sayyid
Muhammad Hadi and Naghawi. Yes, Sayyid is very important. Okay, great. And we have Mahdi al Husayna, right? Am I right? And then we have Minhal Hussein Nasser, right?
Yeah.
And also?
Sayyid Muhammad Yahya
Ja'fari. Great. Sayyid Muhammad Yahya Ja'fari. And of course, me again, Habibullah Fasihizadeh here, okay? So our first objective in holding these sessions to be able to read the words in the Quran, to identify the letters. If, for example, we listen to a qari or reciter, we have to be able to understand him, right?
Yeah.
For example, the qari recites one surah, we have to understand what words do he say, yes? Or what letters, what harakat. So this is called reading of the Quran. And dear respected brothers and sisters, now, inshallah, if I ask any of our friends here, they are able to read from any part of the Quran. So I mean they can read the words. Maybe there will be kind of mistakes, but of course they can read the words of the Quran, right? So, for example, let me ask them some questions. I will choose a page and tell them to recite.
Sir, I'm picking one page.
Okay.
I will pick page for you.
That's okay.
No, I will. Because I read the best.
Oh.
So, hurry up. Page.
I'll give you pain.
No,
page.
It's good.
Page.
How about I just...
No, this.
You'll say 10.
Dear Muslim and brothers and sisters, how is your reading?
338.
338.
And you better read the whole page.
Just listen up.
You're not allowed to skip any lines.
Yeah, listen to one thing, okay?
338?
Yes. Brothers and sisters, listen to one thing. There are a lot of students, okay? They have learned how to read the Quran. They know all the rules. But there is something that keeping them from reading, yes? There is something that does not let them go in and read. Yeah, it
they
says, no, you can't, no, you can't. Yeah, they say, there is a feeling that tells them, okay, you can't. Oh, you make mistake, you get this wrong, okay? Try to fix this. Challenge this, okay? Never let it defeat you, okay? You have to defeat it. Of course, you have learned all the rules. You can do it, okay? Understood, Mahdi?
So for some reason, I can't read Arabic.
One of the reasons is that you think, listen, Mahdi, one of the reasons that you think you cannot read Arabic is this thought that you have. You have to change it to, I can read.
I can read Arabic.
No more things. Just say, I can read. Louder. I can read three times.
Louder.
I can read.
One more time.
Okay. I can read.
Okay.
Don't say anything, okay?
Stop. Just remember that you can read.
I know, but...
You are a good reciter.
I can read, but...
You have a good voice, okay? You can read. But bad, no bad.
Sir, I can read a little bit.
Don't say a little bit. I can read very well, let's just say. Say it. One, two... Say it, come on.
Sorry, I don't know how to lie.
Lie this time. One, two... Say, I can read it well.
I can read...
Very well.
Very well.
Okay. Nice. Don't say anything else, okay? Keep it in mind. So, 338. A'udhu billah.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
Our brother says, say that you have to read louder.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
ما شاء الله
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ويستعجلونك بالعذاب
Again
ويستعجلونك بالعذاب ولن يخلف الله وعده وَإِنَّ يَوْمًا عِنْدَ رَبِّكَ كَأَلْفِ سَنَةٍ مِمَّا تَعُدُّونَ وَكَأَيٍّ مِنْ قرية أمليت لها وهي ظلالمة
Again, وهي
وهي ظلالمة
No, وهي
وهي ظلالمة
No, ظا and ألف
ظا
Okay, ظالمة
وهي ظالمة ثم أخذتما وإلا وإلي المصير.
ما شاء الله. Go to the last ayah. Is it okay, Mahdi?
No.
Last ayah.
Yeah, no, so yes.
Go to the last ayah, okay, because we don't have time. So the last ayah.
ولا يزال الذي ولا يزال الذي الذي كفروا في ملة.
What about noon?
الذين كفروا.
الذين كفروا. ولا يزال الذين كفروا في.
Louder, please.
ولا يزال الذين كفروا.
So what is the difference between the and the second one? ولا يزال الذين.
The first وَلَا يَزَالُ.
Okay, say that's they then.
وَلَا يَزَالُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا فِي مَرْيَةٍ مِّنْهُ.
Mim has?
Mim has كسره.
Okay, في مر.
في مر. في مر. في مريةٍ منه حتى تأتيهم الساعة. تأتي humus.
What about ya?
تأتي humus.
No. What does ya have? Is your socking that you say تأتي?
تأتيهم.
تأتيهم.
تأتيهم الساعة ساعات بغتة أو يأتيهم عذاب يوم القيامة.
عذاب يوم القيامة.
يوم عقيم.
عذاب يوم عقيم. That's good. عذاب يوم القيامة. It means he knows a lot about Qiyamah. He's very, very like. Are you interested or kind of afraid? Which one? I'm sure you're interested because students of Quran, they are not afraid of Qiyamah.
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's Recite the Quran.
وبختم كتابك أرقى وبختم كتابك أرقى.
Sir, page 480?
480, no, 48.
Come on.
No, yeah, 48, only has one ayah.
I have to read it?
Yeah.
Sir, yes, that's read,
difficult.
Sir.
No, 48. That's difficult.
48, sir.
Sir, 48
just
only
one
has one ayah.
Page 48?
Yeah,
48,
one ayah, just
yes.
One ayah.
Just one ayah, read. Just one.
Oh, that must be very difficult.
No, wait, sir, this is so difficult.
I have to read one ayah.
Yes, 108.
The whole page is just one ayah. Did you know this is the longest ayah?
Yeah, I know, I know.
What is the shortest ayah?
It's Alif Lam.
Alif Lam.
Swat.
Qaf.
Qaf.
Wait.
It's here.
No, we don't have pa.
No, we have
qaf.
So we have qaf.
Good. So we will recite, inshallah, this page.
Which page? Which page?
Okay, 48. Page 48. I will recite. Listen up. I will recite. You repeat after me. Okay. So, respected brothers and sisters, we are on page 48. Grab the Quran. Page 48. We will recite, inshallah, our friends, students here. They will repeat us. Repeat after us, and please join them. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا.
إذا تداينتم بدين because now we are practicing I recited بدينين otherwise I have to make it I have to change the تنوين to سكون بدين okay so إلى أجل مسمى فاكتبوه
إلى أجل مسمى فاكتبوه
again. إلى أجل مسمى فاكتبوه
إلى أجل مسمى فاكتبوه
Why do you say Ajlin?
Ajlin.
Sorry,
I can't see the
Quran. Because
it's Tajlin.
Ajalin.
Ajalin. Ajalin, yes.
Okay, so. وَلْيَكْتُبْ بَيْنَكُمْ كَاتِبٌ بِالْعَدْلِ
وَيَكْتِبُ
وَلْيَكْتُبْ
كاتب بالعدل
Look, inshallah you will study. No, you will study inshallah. كاتب You change it to me.
Okay, the last one.
You're not paying attention.
أن يكتب
كما علمه الله
Sir, the last line.
Sir, can you recite this whole page with one breath?
Yeah, inshallah, I will do it.
It's one ayah.
No problem.
So you would do like this.
So thank you so much. Thank you so much. God bless you. That's enough, okay? Up to this part, inshallah, we'll continue. We'll get back, okay? But before we go, let's give thanks to IRIB English.
And say Muhammad Yahya Ja'fari
from
Xavier International School.
And Ali Abdul Basit. And Pakistan.
Okay. So thank you so much. Let's recite a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala
Muhammad wa ajjil faraj.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International School.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
IRIB English Radio.